Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
Podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome to A Celtic State of Mind. My name is Laura Bradburn. I'm alive, is all I can say. I passed a very late fitness test. I am doped up on whatever, I'm here to talk. I have to admit, Tony, Jim, I really was pushing through the pain barrier to be here because I was expecting this to be the big day. Expecting the later we went on in the week. It was this week, it was this week, it was this week. No news yet, but we will get into all of that. We'll get into the communications from the club and all of that stuff. But to start things on a lighter note, we'll start with my usual team. Can you guess the Celtic player from the team quiz? So you guys know who it is. For everybody watching, there was two main guesses that kept coming up on Twitter. David Fernandez and Javi Sanchez Broto. I can say for certain if you were in the Javi Sanchez Broto camp, then you were correct. So he played for Zaragoza B, Colts team. Wonder if they are a good idea. We'll find out. Then the Zaragoza main team, Villarreal, Castellón, Malaga, Erdrionians, Livingston, Celtic, Murcia, Getafe and Heracles. or Hercules, I should really pick teams that I know how to pronounce. Tony, I'll come to you first. What are your memories of Javier Sanchez Broto and his apparently only 8 appearances for the club?
My memory is that he had a fantastic game at Ibrox, didn't he?
Yes.
Come back from one of the trips and were forced to play like kind of 48 or 72 hours after they played a European tie. And played at Ibrox and they won and he was pretty flawless and faultless. And I've always maintained that Martin O'Neill's Achilles heel at Celtic was goalkeepers. He just couldn't pick a good one. But Broto was the best out of the ones that we had at the time. And I maintain that had Broto played in the UEFA Cup, I know they would have probably won. His big, big sherbet dab let us down on that occasion. And I, you know, and I think most Celtic supporters look back fondly at the brief and fleeting appearances that he made and have the same opinion that they could turn the clock back. They would wish Javier Sanchez Broto was in goal in Seville and take their chance that night, and we probably might have won it.
Yeah, I think so. Jim, I think Tony raises a good point there, and it's something that I know as a Celtic supporter who only very, very briefly remembers the end of Paddy Bonner's career. A good goalkeeper has been hard to come by in the 32 years I've been watching Celtic, but Javier Sanchez Broto came pretty close to one of the better ones we've seen, do you not think?
I would echo Tony's comments there. I think O'Neill, that was one of the areas that if we had a good goalkeeper, then I'd have made such a difference to the team. Whether we'd have won in Seville, who knows, but it's one of these things that you always think, what if, and it was quite a bizarre one when you can look back on it, because he was cup-tied because he played for Livingston in Europe.
Yeah.
Because Livingston got third the year before. So you think of all the kind of bizarre circumstances that add up to something. You know, it'd be different if he was cup-tied with Hibs or Aberdeen or something, but to be cup-tied by Livingston and then not able to play.
Yeah.
There's a what if there, because obviously a goalkeeper is a kind of key position in the team. And as Tony said, maybe Big Rab could have played a wee bit better in the final and maybe he might have made a difference, but who knows? As you said, he only played 8 games. Beach Ball Sunday being the highlight of the 8 games that he played, and he looked a half-decent goalkeeper. Yeah, so...
Yeah, that another thing about Beach Ball Sunday that always makes me laugh. I seem to remember the Rangers supporters bringing beach balls and sombreros when they qualified for the final in Manchester, but originality was never their forte. But we'll carry on anyway. Carry on to communications from the club. They have been aplenty this week, Tony. And as usual, we complain there's no communication until there is, and then it's of that standard. We'll talk about the season ticket statement alluding to the fact they had hoped to appoint or announce the manager before the season tickets went out. What was your impression of the statement? What was your impression of the whole way they went about it?
I think you say that a good syllable there. The state. The state, of that statement was, it was all over the place. And I'm a journalist today. Like me or loathe me, that's what I am. That's what I do. Words are my currency. I was pretty lost for them when I viewed that statement. And I made a clip on our personal group chat that I said it was written by a 7-year-old with a half brick. There are better 7-year-olds at school able to communicate better English than that statement.
Yes.
Capping for manager, stuff like that. And I don't know who sanctioned that statement. Wouldn't want to guess, but surely someone in a high position at Celtic would have been able to produce a better communique to the fans than that. After all, that's the first time they'd spoken to the fans to give them any information. Poorly constructed, just grammatical-wise, it was terrible. And also, I also say before we came on here, remember Jim Traynor's Rangers statement, which famously contained the word concomitant, and every man, woman and child ran for a dictionary to see what concomitant actually meant. You know, these are statements that you remember. You won't remember that statement. And how can Celtic produce a statement that doesn't actually tell you anything, says nothing, but they cock it up? I mean, it's frightening. Now, I was held to very... Jim will say it off here as well. Most people are held to very high standards. because they compile reports, they compile written analysis, whatever. You know, you construct sentences in English in most in every job. And I just found it very poor. And when I'm working and I write something, I have to give it 100%. And especially when I started in the Daily Record, there was a lots of people that I was in awe of, because their wisdom, their knowledge, and just the way they knew the business was frightening. And it helped you. It made you become a better writer. It made you become a better journalist. You raised your standards so much. You pulled your socks up, and you would be ashamed to produce something like that, to be honest, and pass it off as fit for a national newspaper. Mm-hmm. And for that to be deemed fit for national consumption for Celtic supporters, then I'm in the wrong game. I really am.
Yeah.
I just found it staggering. I really did.
Yeah, Maravchik25 commenting on YouTube, and thanks to everybody commenting on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. Maravchik25 saying it was amateur hour. Zinkovics on YouTube saying, honestly, it gives up with this board. It's real bit of a wind-up. BSO, and good afternoon, everybody. So good afternoon, Zinkovics. Thank you for commenting. Really appreciate it. Jim, as Tony says, you and I are not journalists by trade, far from it. Journalists tend to have a very specific skill with words and can communicate in a way that many of us aspire to and envy. But even in our lines of work, you know, especially in the day and age of email and all that kind of thing, you know, the ability to write in communicable English in a way that can be interpreted the way you intend it to be interpreted is a vital part of the job. What did you think of the statement? Was there anything that you particularly liked or disliked about it?
I think there's two parts to it, Laura. Actually, how it looked and then the actual content of it. And people might say we're being a wee bit pedantic in terms of how it looks. But my theory in life is that if you can't do the small things right, how do you trust someone to do the big things right? And I was listening to Kevin and Colin on Wednesday, so and the statement had come out then. So I'd seen a bit of it before I looked at it. And then when I looked at it, as I said, this might sound a bit pedantic to people, but the formatting of it, the English of it, I had to read the first paragraph three times to say, what's this about? And then I text Tony to say, what's your view on this? Is it just me that thinks about this? So for lots of people, that really won't matter because, you know, it's just words at the end of the day. But they've had months and months to put that statement together. They could have issued that statement 3 months ago. So there's no excuse for the way it looked. In terms of the content of that, interesting content, I think no matter what they put out, people are going to have a go at them. There's nothing they could say within that communication that was going to make fans happy. In terms of the content, I think they were looking back and they were looking forward, and there's a bit of a rallying call as well. In terms of looking back, you could split that into two. You looked at the performance and looked at the added value, as they call it. And in terms of the performance, I was quite surprised at how meek they were, how apologetic they were. Because if it was me, I would have been on the front foot, double down on this. Because if you're on the board, you're looking back on last season, I'd have been saying, well, last summer, you know, we just delivered 9 in a row. We won the League Cup, won the Europa League section, beat Lazio home and away, and we're 2 games away from the quadruple treble. We kept all our star players, and we're about to sign 6 more to add to the squad. We're all dead confident. But things didn't work out the way they worked out. You know, so we'll dust ourselves down and we go again. You know, front foot, look forward, let's go. And then the added value is they shot themselves in the foot. As soon as they said those two words, added value, because added value to me and to you, Laura, and to Tony are 3 different things entirely. And Kevin in the Wednesday bulletin forecast what they were going to do, a token gesture, a voucher, a £50 voucher. They're well not doing that, basically. Because I think they had to buy the goodwill of the fans. They had to spend some money to get that goodwill back. And if it was me, again, and I don't know the finances of the club, I think it would have cost them £5 million. Give every season ticket holder £100 off next season's season ticket. Because there's going to be lots of people who are on the fence a wee bit about next season. So £100 off next season would have been not a bad thing. You know, that cost the club £5 million, but it's tax deductible, so cost them £4 million. Or an alternative to that, another one that would align with the values, because I want to come on to the values that they mentioned as well, the values of the club. They could have said, we'll give you £100 back and you've got till the end of June to claim the £100 back. And if you don't claim it back, we're going to give it to four local food banks, charities, mental health, whatever, just like Paul John did at Christmas there. So I don't really need the £100. If it went to a food bank, I'd be happy with that. And that would align with some. So it had to cost them money, I think, to buy the goodwill back. But here's a £50 voucher. You then look forward and all the stuff about what they're going to give you next year, none of that is of any use to me, is of any value to me. Skills thing, 10% off, the number 7 restaurant, go and watch the team training. You know, it's just, that means nothing to me at all. And what I said back in October in the bulletin, when we were talking about last season, it was a lack of foresight that annoyed me, because what's going to happen next season is we're not going to get into the games for the whole season. So what's their plans for that? They've got no plans for that. And what I said at the time back then, and I still feel at the moment as well, is that if I'm paying £600 for a season ticket, it covers 20 games, it's about £30 a game. I reckon £15 for a pay-per-view is reasonable. So every game I miss, they should give me £15 back. But put the game on pay-per-view and open it up to non-season ticket holders and fans of the other teams as well. Now, do they think there's maybe 50,000 non-season ticket holders in the UK who would buy a match on pay-per-view? So if they're going to give me £15 back, well, Laura, pay £15 for a pay-per-view. You give that to Celtic.
I was going to say, they only need 49,999 because I would buy it. So.
Aye. So basically what you're looking for is something that ends up in cost neutral. And they should have done some research on this. And also last season you were seeing teams like Hibs and Motherwell fans were saying, we want to watch this game on pay-per-view, but we can't get it on pay-per-view because Celtic haven't offered it, because season ticket holders would get angry. So for me, again, the kind of vision thing is lost. You know, am I going to have the same situation again this time next year unless Dom Mackay is going to sort things out? And the last thing I'm going to say, because I'm rabbiting too much, is the kind of rallying call again. Because I took a printout of the statement, and as usual, we've got the kind of one club since 1888 thing. But what I found intriguing was the line that said, our club was born in adversity. It raised in defiance and defined by no other. You know, and I've said before, that sounds like we are the people for the good guys. You know, and I hate those triumphant statements. And then they say, with their own standards and own values. So you then ask the question, what is your own standards? What is your own values? Because this has been a season where there's loads of words have come out all during the season. And because we're on this, because Paul Jones having to do this every single day, we're pouncing on certain words. And I remember after the Ferencváros game, Paul jumped on the word when Neil Lennon said, we have to change the culture. And Paul rightly kept hold of that for a few weeks. Culture, culture, culture. And when the statement got issued back in December that said virtually we're not going to sack Neil Lennon because it goes against the values of the club, I homed in on that and said, what is the values of the club? Tell me what they are, because I don't know what they are really. But if you ask me what the values should be, it should be honesty and transparency and accountability and all those kind of big words. I don't really see that. Because what I said a few weeks ago with Dominic Mackay coming in, I called him, he's got legacy issues to deal with because they've not been dealt with before. You've got the boys' club issue, you've got 10 years of cheating, reassigning those trophies. You've got the year we didn't get into Europe, which we should have, and you've got the secret five-way agreement. How can you have openness and honesty and transparency if you've got a secret five-way agreement? So I'm struggling to see what the values are, and it annoys me when they put things like that in a statement because it's so woolly. And as I said, no matter what they put out, people wouldn't be happy. But it annoys me when they put things like that in as well. You know. Anyway, yep. I've said my piece.
Yes, Tony, before I come back to you to perform somewhat of an autopsy on everything that Jim's just said there, Kevin Graham, who we mentioned was on Wednesday with Colin, I'm going to pull him up here because there's a lot of music shows on A State of Mind, which everybody can go and watch, and I'm quite often laughed at in the chat for my... what should we say, boy band heavy tastes, but Kevin has said, yes, well, Kevin has said, in the words of Boyzone, Celtic say it best when they say nothing at all. I will have you know that was not actually a Boyzone single. That was the debut solo effort by their lead singer, Ronan Keating, and appeared on the 1999 soundtrack for Notting Hill. So, moving on.
Tony, Kevin's just owned there. Kevin's on a corner now with a dunce's hat on.
That's the back of his box.
So, Tony, the £50 voucher that Jim touched on, there was a lot of chat about that online and in various messaging groups across the country, I'm sure. First of all, do you agree with Jim that it's probably not the best way to have gone about the refund? And also, there was an interesting bit in the FAQs that I saw that said, you know, if you choose not to use it, that money will go back into the rebuild. Now, I don't know how your decision whether or not to spend free money in the club shop or not but contributes to the rebuild, but what did you make of that whole bit of the added value?
I think I'll pass on the Celtic strawberry bun buns, you know what I mean? It's not for me. I don't think you can disagree with anything that Jim said there. I mean, people have to do research. Jim said there, they kind of get the small things right. What chance have you got of getting the big things right? There's been utterly no research done on this at all in terms of what added value. They'll rue the day we mentioned these words, you know, added value. But it seems to me, if Jim and lots of other people come up with the fact that a straight £100 off, or if you're going to give any kind of discount and the Celtic supporters don't want to take up on it, put it to food banks and stuff like that. These things are common sense. Absolutely and utterly common sense. And you would find a lot of Celtic supporters would rather donate it to charitable causes than spend it in the club shop. Because quite frankly, I think that's a bit of an insult. You know? I mean, what do you need out the club shop? What does any Celtic supporter need that they don't already have? You know, it's an absolute nonsense. You know, I mean, I was being flippant now with the strawberry bond, but you get my point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just complete and utter tat at times, apart from when they're you know, maybe buying the Celtic strip or whatever. You know, but I think Jim's nailed it there completely and utterly. You cannot fault anything that Jim said there. And just the way that Celtic have gone about this, and it is, what was it, Zinko that said, it's just amateur hour from top to bottom at this moment in time. And, you know, and the communication from the club's been non-existent. And I get what Jim also said, that at some point there would be, Celtic fans wouldn't be happy with any kind of communication, but I think the communication that came out this week, it's been pretty insulting. You know, and the fans just feel so disenfranchised and disillusioned that it doesn't really matter what you offered them. They would just be like, do you know what? No. And quite a lot of them are saying they're withholding their season ticket money until they know who the new manager is. You know, the first community should have been to introduce the new manager. You know, it's just and as Jim alluded to there, the legacy issues as well and moving forward. I mean, the whole club just in a total state of flux and turmoil, really. You know, we all hoped that the new manager coming in would be the uniting factor, but it seems they can't even get this right at this moment in time, and the wait goes on. You know, so it doesn't augur well.
No, it does not. Jim, talking about that and about the new manager coming in being a sort of driving force for season ticket sales, now, the club did acknowledge in the statement that they had hoped to appoint or to announce the manager. Now, Natasha quite rightly pointed out on Twitter that had they said a manager rather than the manager, you might have thought that they were a bit less or further away from the actual appointment than saying the manager. That suggests there's somebody in the offing that they just can't name yet. I put a tweet out myself and said, that I was quite shocked at the season tickets and the friendlies being announced before the manager, because not because I don't think we have to plan for the future, but because I just expect it not to be done in that order. And to tap in, Jim, to the banner that we've got on the show today, letting the Eddie Howe deal falter at this stage sparked major crisis. I know it's all speculation at the moment, but do you think this continued delay and moving on with other announcements is indicative of any issues with the Eddie Howe deal? And if it is, hypothetically, you know, where would that leave us if that was to fall through?
I think you made an interesting point there where you said that did the statement have the word the or the word ah? We've just said the whole statement's a mess, so I don't think people are that clever. They just said, we'll put a the in there or an ah in there. You know, so that's kind of number one. I think all our eggs are in the Eddie Howe basket at this point in time. And I think most of us think that once his contractual obligations are up come the 1st of June, then Eddie Howe will be in the door. If he's not, as you've got in that banner, would that spark a major crisis? It depends who plan B would be. If I put all the bags in Eddie Howe's basket and Eddie's changed his mind, there's not a lot you can do about that. But we need a plan B. And as everyone said in all the bulletins, we're running out of time. Eddie Howe would be the ideal guy. I'm on the Eddie Howe bus, as I think most of us are. And it would spark a major crisis unless they came out and said, and here's the other guy we've got waiting in the wings, and it's somebody who the fans think is a good appointment. And it's not a, no disrespect to John Hughes or Jack Ross or any of the guys, it's a, you know, another name that you say, yeah, okay, fair enough, Eddie didn't work out. It's also the fact that, I mean, one of the things that I think is fairly valid is the fact that if you're aiming high all the time, as Tony always says, that aim the highest as you can. If you're going for the best, then other people want the best as well. So sometimes it doesn't work out. If you want somebody who's not that good, you only get somebody who's not that good. You know, again, no disrespect to Jack Ross, but if you wanted Jack Ross, he'd be there now. No issue. Yeah. If you go for somebody big and there's lots of complications, and what actually tends to fascinate me more these days, and maybe it's like I'm getting older thing because I've seen lots of things, is that so much happens off the park these days, you know. And as football fans, when you're younger, you're quite simplistic. Go and get that manager, you know. And the complexities within that are astonishing. And I watched Amy's interview with Jock Brown a couple of months ago, and I read Jock Brown's book at the time, you know. And Jock Brown's like in a much maligned figure, in much the same way as Fergus. But Jock Brown's job was incredibly complex to bring a number of players to Celtic Park. So the more complex things are, the more chance that things are going to go wrong. So all our eggs are in the Eddie Howe basket, and if it goes wrong, hey-ho, we need to start again. There'd be a major disappointment if that was to transpire.
I thought of one thing, Laura, and if the Eddie Howe deal falters, it's just that bit in Airplane, the film Airplane, where they tell everybody they ran out of coffee. I just think that's going to happen, and people lose their head, and it'll be like, oh, you know, they'll just go off the nuts, to use a Glasgow parlance expression.
Helen McCallum on YouTube has commented that this rate Eddie Howe will be announced in the Christmas ad, which I really hope is not the case. But Tony, to pick up on what Jim, one of the things that Jim said there, you know, all our eggs are in the Eddie Howe basket. I don't know if it's just because I don't pay as much attention to these ongoing sagas at other clubs or whatever, but I'm not aware of a situation where somebody's so openly linked with a club for so long to the point where all other names that were mentioned in the first instance fall away. I mean, we are in a position, surely, where if not Eddie Howe, then who? Because Roy Keane, who looked close to, or if rumours are to believe, was actually spoken to about the job, his name's not been mentioned anywhere near recently. Lucien Favre briefly was mentioned because he left his job earlier. And in the meantime, club after club after club in Scotland, England, elsewhere, are appointing managers within days, sometimes maybe a week of getting rid of their previous manager, while we just sort of stagger on. I don't know that there's a question in here. I'm looking for for help.
That's why Celtic have courted this guy for the best part of 3 months, haven't they? Give or take. Yeah. Well, that's why you can't afford to fail, really. You know, because you say to yourself, surely every hurdle, barrier, deal breaker would have been spoken about in order for you to advance talks to any kind of stage. And as you say, and I've kept saying as well, no one at Celtic and Eddie Howe has ever said anything about this. That's why I was convinced that it was so far down the line. And then you go to the pedantic stage where appoint the manager, not a manager, that kind of thing. You seem to think there's a hidden confidence there that they have their man. But the timing of it, I mean, I got dug up the other week for calling it a saga. And as Jim said there, it is a complicated process. I get that. But surely not at this stage that Celtic are dealing with complicated processes. See, if you're a big club, you iron out all these things. You say, what does it take to get you to come to manage your football club? We think you're the man. You go and get the man if you've identified the man. And then he says, it takes X, Y, and Z. And you give them X, Y, and Z. If you really believe that this is the man to be the manager of your football club and take you forward, and you've got every confidence in the director of football thing, okay, maybe that's a stumbling block with Virgil Harkin, Richard Hughes thing, and I get that. But these are things that surely can be ironed out, not something that's going to be a glitch or a snag.
Mm.
You have to approach this as, you know, human beings and adults, not something that you take so far down the line and say, right, that's it, it's off. You know, it's just, it'd be staggering, utterly staggering and bewildering if this falls through at the last minute, because there would be only one party to blame, and it wouldn't be Eddie Howe.
I think the answer to the question, Tony, is money, because it's always money.
Yeah.
Now we're totally dependent on Eddie Howe, so we've got no control over this at all. How could we have got control? I think we've waited till his contract has run down. So if we wanted him back in February and it cost us 2 million or 3 million quid, then we'd be in control of the situation. He'd be in the door. And obviously, we're just guessing. We have no idea what's actually happening. But if that was the case, it was, well, let Eddie Howe's contract run down, we get him for nothing in June, or we pay £3 million in February and we get him there, and then we're in total control of the situation. And OK, he might not be one to be linked to last season, but that would certainly put us in control of the situation, and you can start to plan for the next season. And we wouldn't blame him for last season. So things will always come down to money. And if we had a chance to get Eddie Howe back in February for a reasonable cost, whether that may be 2 or 3 million quid, and didn't do it, then that would be very typical Celtic. If it all
well, see, you spoke about honesty and transparency. I would want someone to come out and say, this was down to money then. Come out and say, he didn't sign the contract because financially it wasn't good enough for him, or whatever. But they have to come out and tell you that. Because, as you say, everything is down to money. But it would be a totally Celtic thing to do for this to fall through at the last minute because of money.
To come back on that, Tony, though, is that the actions of a big club if we don't get Eddie Howe to come out and say, ah, well, he wanted too much money? Is that the actions of a big club, do you think?
I think it is the actions of a big club, because you're telling people how the deal fell through.
Mm-hmm.
I think that,
sorry,
there's no other excuse, is there? Mm-hmm. You mean she's under the sun?
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more. As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
But if you're going to be honest and transparent, you come out and say, listen, he wanted too much, or he was costing too much, I'd rather know that than not know it.
Mm-hmm.
And then think,
sorry,
and go on, Jim.
No, I didn't mean that Eddie Howe wanted too much. It was the fact that to get Eddie Howe out of his contract, we'd have to pay Bournemouth the money to get out of his contract. Yeah. So, and this has happened in the past where, you know, don't want to say John McGinn again, but the John McGinn thing was that we'll just let that lie because he'll want to come and play for Celtic. So that's the card we'll play. You know, we will stick, and then what happens is it just falls apart. So we've done this before. Hopefully that's not the case again, because we're trying to be more positive, because last season's finished and we move on, and hopefully we get this thing tied up. And if we don't, hopefully there's a good plan B in place. Keep it positive. Yeah.
You don't trust them to have a plan B in place, but that's the thing, isn't it?
Well,
you know,
plan C then, or plan D, whatever one it is, that's what we want.
You know, I just, you despair, you utterly despair.
Well, on that note, I think we'll try and move on to something a little bit more positive. Now, Tony, you raised an interesting talking point that you wanted to talk about today. And I'll come to you first on it before I come to Jim to see his thoughts. A club that did go out and get the man they wanted was Villarreal, ex-club of Javier Sanchez Broto, as we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It's proved an excellent decision, because as we all saw during the week, they saw off Manchester United via penalty shootout to win the Europa League. Jim has said numerous times that progress in Europe is what we should be aiming for, because the domestic trophies, you know, for Celtic should be the standard. So, I totally agree with that. You were talking about how, you know, if Villarreal, a club of their size, which let's not beat about the bush, is probably one of the smaller clubs in Spain, and has been punching above their weight for nearly 20 years now. What is the difference between us and them that they seem to be able to compete at that level, get the managers they want, create an atmosphere that attracts players that probably wouldn't otherwise go to that club? What do you think they're doing right, and why can't we do that?
A lot of people say the Spanish league, the TV rights, they get a lot of money in it, and I get all that, right? But try to tell me Villarreal are a bigger club than Celtic. No chance. Absolutely no chance. I that's the first thing I said in the group chat when Villarreal won the Europa League. If they can do it, why can't we? Or certainly, if they can do it, why can't Celtic get to the latter stages of that kind of competition?
Mm-hmm.
The financial disparity shows that, and supporters ain't going to like this, but Celtic are a Europa League club. Bottom line, you know, the success for Celtic is getting to the group stage of the Champions League, maybe possibly getting through the group in a last 16 tie and taking their chance. And that would be great success in that tournament. But I think there's nothing to suggest that Celtic can't win the Europa League moving forward if all the building blocks are in place, you've got a good manager and good players. Because you should be able to go into the latter stages of that competition. Martin O'Neill showed it. But you could do it. You know, Brendan Rodgers' teams in Europe were, you know, it wasn't enjoyable watching Celtic getting scudded 7-0 and 5-0. You know, it's just not enjoyable, uninspiring. But I think Brendan Rodgers is making a point to those upstairs at times, saying, well, don't give me the tools, you can't compete. We couldn't compete. You know, being beaten 5-0 by PSG at home showed you couldn't compete at that level. Yet Martin O'Neill's team went toe-to-toe with lots of European big guns. So if you get the structure right, then mm-hmm. you can compete at a level that suits you best, and that level's Europa League. So I don't have any qualms about the fact that Celtic should be able to get to the latter stages and in the future win it if teams like Villarreal can do it. Rangers have shown you that you can compete in Europe.
Yeah,
done very well in Europe. Been organised, got the right man in, the right set of players, the right kind of tactical formation and style of play. You know, not fantastic to watch, but it's been effective for them.
Yeah.
You know, so if Rangers can do it, then Celtic's performance in Europe has been utterly abysmal. And as Jim's rightfully said, you are judged on your performances in Europe. It defines you as a big club, which is why Celtic are a big club, because they've won the thing with the big ears in the week with us. You know, it's the 54th anniversary of it. So, you know, hat tip to them for making Celtic the club that they are today. Lisbon Lions, of course. But that's why you're a big club. Success on the European platform in that stage, that defines you. And if Villarreal can do it, then why can't Celtic do it? I pose the question, why can't a club like Celtic emulate that feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement. I think for some people watching, they might look at what we're saying here and say that it's arrogant to suggest that we know we're a bigger club than Villarreal or whatever. What we can say at the very least is that we have a higher European pedigree, and maybe not in the last 20 years, but certainly going further back. Jim, taking on board Tony's comment, do you agree that, you know, with a change in the way that we are run, we should be competing with clubs of that ilk, or you know, outstripping them at that level?
Absolutely. I mean, everything Tony says is spot on. Building blocks. I've used the word vision before. It's a vision thing. So how do we know Celtic are doing well? Fast forward to 5 years' time, how would I measure success? The number of European coefficient points that we have. That's what I measure success. Because if you have, I mean, I think we're something like, last time I looked at this, we're 40-odd, something like 45th. And if you look at our coefficient points in the last few years, it's gone down the way each season, whereas our major rivals across the city, incrementally, they're going up year on year on year. And that's what we should aim for. And if you make good decisions, 9 times out of 10, you get good outcomes. So it's about building blocks. It's about getting the right manager, a modern thinking manager, getting the right players, young, hungry players, tactically, technically good, 60,000 people coming to watch the team. You know, there is no excuse for doing a lot better than we're doing just now. I think the Champions League is beyond us. I mean, even last 16 is beyond us. Europa League, yeah. If you look at the teams that have done well this season, including our major rivals across the city, they've done exceptionally. They were very unlucky not to enter the last eight. You know, so there's no reason at all why we can't do that. No reason at all.
Yep, I'm in total agreement with both of you. Thanks everybody for commenting on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. One thing that I just wanted to say, if you hadn't seen it last night, it went live. Amy Canavan's Soccer Supernova, she had to interview this week Paul Elliott, ex-Celtic player obviously, and actually, I didn't know an awful lot about his career, but I didn't realise he actually worked under Billy McNeil at Aston Villa as well. So if there's somebody you're going to learn from as a centre-half, who better than Big Caesar anyway? Tony, I don't know if you had a chance to see it, obviously, but you and Jim will have more memories of Paul Elliott than me. What kind of a player was he? What kind of a man was he to represent the Hoops?
First and foremost, he's a cracking big guy. Had a couple of dealings with him journalistically and interviewed him a couple of times, and a lovely smashing big fella, which is always good when you speak to somebody for the first time and you don't know what they're like, but great to deal with. I think Paul Elliott was another one of these great players at the wrong time. You know, John Collins fits into that mould as well. You know, it just came at the time when Rangers star was on the rise, or, you know, they were sweeping everything domestically, you know, and I loved Paul Elliott as a player. I thought he was a tremendous footballer. I thought he was a tremendous defender. And there was a joke. I think not the View did it. It was brilliant because there used to be a magazine and it was called You Are the Ref. And then they would give you scenarios. It's football, the rules of football, to see how well you knew the rules.
Yeah.
And they'd always give you an A, B, C or D. And then you had to guess which one it was, kind of thing. And Not the View did a kind of skit on it. And every one of their D's was, do you A, award a free kick, a goal, a buy kick, or D, book Paul Elliott? Because Paul Elliott booked 15 or 16 times in a row and created something, a record in Scotland, and he wasn't a dirty player.
Uh-huh.
He created some record where he got booked, like, I think it was 15 or 16 games in a spin, and you're thinking, wow. Mm-hmm. And he just wasn't that kind of player, so it became a running joke, and I think that was Not the View that did that. You Are the Ref, do you? Bump, bump, bump. Paul Elliott, and it became a standing joke, but Paul Elliott was a tremendous footballer, you know, and again, Jim will probably say it, just that mismanagement and mishandling of Celtic, that was a guy you could have built a team around. He was a colossus, he was a centre-half, you know, could score goals and had no amount of skill, you know, but just the way the club was run at that particular time, almost run into the ground. Guys like that could have been absolute heroes for Celtic, but fondly remembered because of still being there and giving their all. And Paul Elliott was a guy that gave his all, and you know, I think the Celtic supporters loved him for that, despite being there at a time when you wouldn't want to be a Celtic player during that particular period in the club's history. It's a thankless task.
Yeah, and follower Celtic on Twitter has commented Elliot never pulled out a tackle, so he's already won a point above your favourite Christopher Ayer, as far as that's concerned, Tony. Jim, I don't know if you've managed to see the interview or not. I only caught the first sort of 10 minutes of it, but I'm certainly going to go back and watch the rest. What are your memories of Paul Elliott? And to echo what Tony said, I think from my knowledge of the time period that he played for the club, he certainly played for them at a tumultuous time for the club, at a time of great uncertainty. I think he's an influence from what I've read and what I've seen of him that would go down as well in the club today as he did when he was here the first time.
It wasn't here very long. I think it was a couple of seasons. And I think he would have been an ideal captain. I think we said a few weeks ago, we're talking about Paul McStay. And I think the captaincy weighed very heavily in Paul McStay. And if Paul Elliott had been there for 4 or 5 years, then he'd have been an ideal captain at the time. But I think you'll know how good Paul Elliott was. If you ask most Celtic fans to name who they thought their best team was, say, after the Lisbon Lions, say from the mid-70s onwards, if you depict your best Celtic team, I think you'd find Paul Elliott in a lot of those teams. I did a podcast with Paul John about a year and a half ago, something like that, and he asked the question, who's your all-time favourite Celtic team? I think it was post-Lisbon Lions or something. And I think I mentioned Elliott in the team, because that's how good he was.
Yep.
At the time. So I think that's how you measure of how good a player is, because people have seen these players and seen other players throughout the club's history and put him right up there with the kind of Johan Mjalbys and the Baldies and even the Van Dijks. I mean, obviously Van Dijk's wanted bigger and better things, but in terms of playing in Scotland, I'd have said Elliott's right up there with Van Dijk.
Guy that never played that long either, lad, likened Elliott to Mark Leeper. I thought they were just elegant defenders, right? And when I'm naming my 11, I always find it hard to separate the likes of Leeper, Elliott, and guys like that, you know, because I loved the both of them. I thought for the amount of time that they were actually there, they gave their all, you know, and circumstances dictated that they left. But, you know, they're still very much players that I really admired and adored for the short time they were there, you know.
I think that's the point I'm trying to make. Without having spoken to you about that, you've said straight away I'd put Elliott in with Weeper and all these kind of guys. So I think I don't speak for anyone, but I think if you had asked Celtic fans, I think a lot of them would likely say Big Elliott's in and around one of my favourite centre halves in the past 30, 40 years. So I think that speaks for itself.
Yeah, I think I made the point earlier in the show that in the last 30 years or so of following Celtic, I've always thought we struggled to get good goalkeepers, but we've certainly never struggled in the centre half area. We've had in more recent years Van Dijk, Denier. Going further back, you had a back three of Vilharen, Mjalby, Baldy, you know, and then going even further back than that, you had Reaper, Stubbs. You know, we've never ever struggled really to get centre halves. Arguably, centre half pairing at the moment is probably the weakest we've had in a long time, so hopefully that's something that we can sort going forward.
But to go back, the common denominator, Laura, they're all, yes, they're all big guys.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They're all guys that would terrorise you, or should terrorise.
Well, I was going to say, I had a conversation with somebody this week who, you know, was talking about how, you know, so-and-so is not physical enough or so-and-so is not strong enough. And I think that's a bit of an old-fashioned way to look at the game, but I certainly don't think so when it comes to the centre-halves and the defenders. Yes, they've got to have a football brain that's maybe more advanced than it used to be. They're not just expected to head it back in the direction it came from or lump it out to Rose Ed. There's got to be more ball playing in it and more passing and that kind of thing. But certainly, you know, it never fails to help if you're big, broad-shouldered and strong in the defence.
Defending's an art, Laura. It's an art form, right? End of story. Defending's an art. Now, you master the basics art of defending. You can work on everything else. Then that's when the ball playing comes. If you can head it, you can tackle, you can anticipate, you know, all these kind of things. Then once you've done that, the rest follows, because you become a better player by the fact that you have mastered the art of defending.
Yeah.
And that's how you become a good player, in my own opinion.
One of my favourite things in football to watch, and this is not to be too contrarian about it, is, and Giorgio Chiellini that plays for Juventus is a big one, he celebrates as much as a striker scoring a goal when he makes a tackle that stops somebody else, and I think that's great. I think that's what you want in a defender, surely.
I've got a very simple view of football, always had, very much analogue in a digital age, to just quote Tony there. I want five people who can defend and do nothing but defend, plus a goalkeeper can save, and five guys who can attack and do nothing but attack. I know that's a very simplistic view of life, but that's it. And that's how lots of teams get success. And the team has won the league this year, that's what they've got. Five guys who can defend and defend well, and five guys that attack. But also remember back when Tommy Burns got sacked, and we're going to that season trying to stop them doing the 10, and Joe Kinnear's name was getting mentioned at the time, and he'd managed Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And I thought, if we get Joe Kinnear, maybe that's not a bad shout, because what I would do is have a good goalkeeper and eight Vinnie Joneses. Just four guys at the back who just kick anything that moves, four guys in the middle who kick anything that moves, 6'2", and the Canio and Cadetti up front, and we'd have stopped the 10. That was my game plan with Joe Kinnear, because what tended to happen with Tommy Burns' team is they get bullied all the time. And if you had a team with eight, Vinnie Jones in it, you wouldn't get bullied. Wouldn't it be great to watch? You know, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. But all turned out well with Wayne Jamieson anyway. So
I think I would have preferred Roy Kinnear at that time.
Listen, you're not in bad company, Jim. Johan Cruyff's one of my footballing idols, and you know, everybody talks about him being a football revolutionary and that kind of thing, but he's got a very simplistic view of football as well. You know, keep the ball further away from your opposition's goal and they're less likely to score, and you know, it's all full of sayings like that, so it's not a bad thing. But we went on a bit of a tangent there, not a bad thing, but I wanted to get back to and Jim, I'll come to you in this first as the financial guru of the Axom contributors. Although we've been talking about the fact that, you know, we aren't a Champions League level side and we're very far from it, you know, these days even to get into the group stage would be an achievement. There's got to be some worry there, I would think, from higher up at the club, that, you know, it's now a number of years since we were in the group stage of the Champions League, and the financial hit that's going to take on top of COVID is going to cause a problem. Do you think there's major concerns if we don't qualify for the group stages of the Champions League this season, even just from a financial point of view?
I think if we don't qualify and the major rivals do, I think that's a huge issue. If we don't and they don't, from a domestic point of view, as I've said in weeks gone by, I think next year's league campaign will be fairly close, because I think they've had an extraordinary season. They won't have that kind of season again, as we showed when we had the invincible season. You know, we went from 106 points into 82. So they're not going to get those kind of points again. And we've had a really bad season, so we'll put more points on the board. They'll put some less points on the board. We might end up being not that far away. In fact, in the Glasgow derbies this year, they had 10 points to our one. If we can reverse that, there's an 18-point swing. So, to answer the question, we don't get into the Champions League. If they do, we could be in trouble. If we don't, then the league will take care of itself. To echo the points Tony's made before about building blocks, I think we want a good manager in as soon as possible, sign some good players, tactically, technically astute, and let's see where that takes us, and try and build incrementally year on year. Everything will come down to money, Laura. Everything always does. And we have to be careful about what we do with the money. And I know I get a bit of a slagging on here when I say some things like I wouldn't pay players more than 10 grand a week. Now, you might add a bonus system to that, but you have to watch the money, because, you know, if you don't watch the money, you could go bust, you could get liquidated, and as we know, that's it finished. You know, don't insult my intelligence. The liquidation isn't forever. You don't want to go down that route. Mm-hmm. When I hear people saying things like, oh, well, we could sign Josh Doyle for 3 million and Nisbet for 4. To me, I'm thinking, no, that's not what I would do. And I saw a young guy, Montgomery. What was the game he played? Was it St. Johnson?
Yes,
Another week, whatever it was. And he looked really good. You know, so do you give Montgomery a game, or do you pay £3 million to Josh Doig? Discuss. You know, because all these things come down to money. You know, and you have to be very careful with the money you've got. And also, just kind of echoing the last point there, I wouldn't spend big money on guys that play at the back, because you can coach guys at the back. You can coach people to be destructive. You know, you've only got to look at the Scotland setup, the Kilmarnock setup, Motherwell, these kind of teams. They're, you know, they can coach guys not to lose goals, but you can't coach guys to score goals. I don't mean that to be sounded there, but you know, that is, that's what you pay the big money for, you know.
Yeah.
So to me,
yeah,
I wouldn't pay a lot of money. So you have to be careful. So if it's Eddie Howe, no matter who's coming in, he's going to be given X million pounds to spend in terms of the transfer budget. He's going to be given X million extra, possibly, to spend on wages. He has to be very careful how he uses that money. And the guys in the week, I heard the guys talking about Lewis Ferguson or the boy Campbell.
Yeah.
So you can get Lewis Ferguson for £3 million or Alan Campbell for nothing. To me, Alan Campbell for nothing. Because how I judge players, I don't watch a lot of football these days. Again, it's an age thing. I think with the COVID this year, it's just been horrible watching football. So I've hardly watched much football. And I can only assess players and how they play against us. And apart from the last game I've seen, Lewis Ferguson, I don't think he's kicked the ball against us. Whereas Campbell, I've noticed. I know they're not similar players, but spend nothing in Campbell. I think in terms of the wages we pay, both of them would be pretty low. So would I put £3 million in Ferguson or nothing in Campbell? I would go nothing in Campbell. So the question you posed to me is, financial guru, I think we have to be careful with the money that we've got. And I said before, it's not about buying big, it's about buying smart. You know, spending £5 million and Albion a Yeti, well, that's good. Didn't turn out so well. £5 million in Barkas, that's good. Didn't turn out so well. We could have got Marshall on a free transfer or the Hibs goalie for 500,000 or whatever. It's about being smarter in terms of what we do. And how you judge if that's a success or not is the outcomes. You know, so sometimes you make good decisions with bad outcomes. Something like Shane Duffy, people maybe thought, well, that's a good decision, but it had a bad outcome.
Yeah.
And not to go back to last season again, but people would tend to look at the appointment of Neil Lennon as a bad decision, but in fact, his first season, there was a good outcome. But in his second season, not so much. You know, so the money will always dictate everything. And that's, you actually always almost came back to the very first question you asked about season tickets. Season tickets drive how much you can spend on players. And you can't just say, aye, spend £3 million on him and £4 million on him, £7 million to Hibs for two young guys. And again, I've said in the past, if you're doing that kind of stuff, that's a shocking indictment on your ability to identify players. Because we should be getting Josh Dog before he becomes Josh Dog, Joig.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. You know, we should be taking a chance on a Kevin Nisbet at Dunfermline as opposed to waiting until he goes to Hibs. Now, I'm not saying all these guys would be playing in the team. I'm not saying that at all. But if I was in charge of the finances, I'd be a bit concerned when we're spending money on people, like if we were to spend money on that. Because we've only got to look in the last few years, the people like Bayou, Kouassi, Patrick Klamala, and these kind of guys, you know, were they sensible buys? No, really. You know, and people kind of say, well, it was only 2 million. 2 million is a huge amount of money for Celtic. Not if you're in English football, it's nothing, but 2 million to us is a lot of money, you know. And if the season tickets are going to go down, then there's less money to play with. So we have to be smarter. And that's why somebody like Eddie Howe, you think, well, he will think the things through. And the thing I was thinking as well, that if you're an Eddie Howe working down south, you know, spending £20 million on a player is nothing. So yeah, he would have to change his mindset completely. No, because for spending £3 million is a lot to us. You know, so if we get Eddie, he has to change his mindset a wee bit because we have to look after the money.
That's me. No, I'm in total agreement with that, and I think that's one thing that we can all criticise Peter Lowell for a lot of what he's done during his tenure at the club, but one thing he has done is made sure that we're a financially viable institution over the years and remain so. And Michael the Boy on Twitter has commented, Jim totally agrees with you, Alan Campbell is a no brainer for me, good player, as Turnbull would testify. You know, if you could join that together, Tony, on you go.
I was making the point that you could those two could be reunited. The two of them play the best football with Motherwell, right, get them for nothing, but it all comes down to your scouting network as well. I've banged on about that. How can you not identify Josh Doig and Kevin Nisbet before they go to somewhere else? You know, where is your scouting network? You know, why are Celtic not watching these players from very early on and not having to shell out like £3 million quid for Lewis Ferguson, as Jim said? It's a total no-brainer. You get Alan Campbell for nothing, or £3 million quid for Lewis Ferguson. If it comes to a choice, there is no choice. You know, building blocks again, being a big club, having all these things in place, a real scouting network, especially for what's under your nose. You know what I mean? These things should fall into place, you know, and spending, you know, crazy money on the likes of Yeti, and, you know, just, you know, it's staggering that a club like this does things like that, continues to make those mistakes because that network isn't already there. They'll tell you it is. They'll tell you it is, but it clearly isn't.
Yep.
You know, the also, just in front of them. Go on, Jim. No, go on.
Also, just about, and last season we spent the guts of $13 million and up the wage bill by at least £6 million. Was that good value for money? Could that have been spent more wisely? That's the issue for me. And, you know, so,
and my thing about signing players, my signing policy has always been the same. Sign good players. Sign ones that are shouted and you know that are good players. I get Jim's argument that a player might be a good idea. They don't all work, right? But if you sign good players, you've got half a chance. Don't sign unknown quantities for lots of money and think, we hope he comes good, or projects, or things like that. Sign good players. It's no hard to work out who they are if you're doing your scouting right. You know, it is mind-boggling that Celtic cannot get this right. And I've had so many bad players come through the doors in recent years for staggering amounts of money. It's frightening. It beggars belief, really. So where is this scouting network that they're supposed to have if they're supposed to be a big club and people doing their due diligence on scouting good footballers or identifying good footballers? I've said before, you and I could watch next season the French League, Italian League, Spanish League, pick a European League and say, come up with a list of candidates for the problem goalkeeping position or the problem right-back position, and you would give Celtic a list like that. You could, if that was your specific remit, to go and find me a player, a goalkeeper. It's no hard. You could identify a good footballer.
The other thing that's concerned me about this season as well, and I've said, is it's not even about looking elsewhere for players. It's about identifying the players that are worth their shot at the club. You know, Turnbull took 6 months to get into the team when arguably he was fit enough to be in the team before that. Soro had no injury problems that we were aware of, came in and made a huge difference, and for reasons as yet unknown to us, didn't get into the team. Ewan Henderson comes in fleetingly between loan spells and puts in decent performances that I think would improve with an extended run in the team. Montgomery comes in, has a brilliant performance as part in terms of a full team debut in a team that wins 4-0 over St Johnstone when they've struggled to win other games this season, and then is immediately back out of the team. So there's a lack of consistency not only outside the club in how we identify players, but how we identify and nourish and nurture the players that we have at our disposal in the club. It's like Jim said before, spending $3.5 million on Klamala, are you telling me there's not anybody in the youth setup that can do at least as good a job, and you've not wasted $3.5 million on a guy that's back out the door for zero loss but zero gain as well?
No, I mean,
that's my point. When you go, Tony.
No, go on.
No, I think that's the point I'm trying to make, in that if you take the lad Montgomery, Montgomery costs nothing. Josh Doyle costs £3 million. Discuss again. Mm. You know, so I think we have been poor in terms of our squad management. You know, I've said that all last season, giving people games. And I used to get slagged rotten in the first few bulletins I was on because I kept saying, we've got five subs. Why don't we use five subs? And that was my kind of every single week, five subs. Why don't we use five subs? And we didn't take that opportunity because guys like Sorrow, Turnbull should have had some game time. I'm not saying they should have started, but they could have got 20 minutes here, 25 minutes there. And that young lad, Montgomery, looked a half decent player. You know. And we talked about Dembele as well, as somebody who could have maybe a bit of game time. So I think it's the kind of easy thing to do. And it looks good going out into the market and splashing money on this guy and this guy and this guy. But hold on, these are millions of pounds here. And you just have to be a wee bit smart in terms of what you do. And to get back to Tony's building blocks thing, if you've got the right manager in place who knows exactly what he's doing, with the right coaching staff and sports science and dietary and all this kind of stuff that goes with it, and a scouting network that identifies the right kind of players, then you've got half a chance of doing okay. And to me, again, the measure of that will be the coefficient points going forward. That's how you measure success.
You also know what's coming from the academy as well, if you're hands-on. So you will know the players you have at your disposal and the youth ranks, you know. So as Jim got back to earlier, I've got a simplistic way of viewing football as well. you know, and I think these things just sort of go hand in hand, you know, and it doesn't make me an analogue man in a digital world. It just sort of, I see things through a certain prism, and it all kind of, it makes common sense to me about these things happening, you know, so.
Also, the fact that we don't see these players, the manager will see them every day in training.
Yeah.
You know, so if the lad Montgomery's, you know, doing really well in training and is outstanding and putting in cross balls, and if Dembele's taking people on and stuff like that, and you see that in training day in, day out, why wouldn't you throw him in? Because you know he can do it. Whether he can do it in front of a big crowd, then again, it's been COVID, so there's no crowds anyway. So there's another reason for putting them in, you know. So I think that squad management is something that let us down.
That should be rewarded, Jim. Guys like that, yes. Youngsters like that who are performing well in training, they should get rewarded so that it encourages others to say, well, if he can do it, I can do it. Right, that's the way it works. Again, going back to a simplistic thing, a youngster making waves at first team training, promote them to the first team. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yep, no, I totally agree. I think maybe we are being too simplistic, but football at its best is a simple game, I think, and that's probably the note to end it on. Hopefully we'll have more positive news for you in the coming weeks. Thanks everybody for getting involved. The comments have been coming thick and fast, and we really do appreciate everybody taking the time to watch us. You can obviously catch up on this and other shows on the A State of Mind YouTube channel. They remain up there for you to rewatch at your leisure. Thanks very much, Jim. Thanks very much, Tony, for another brilliant Friday, and we will hopefully see you again soon.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio is a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.